I didn't prepare anything. I didn't prepare my, you know, Aboriginal version of "I have a dreaming." I've lost my partner, my creative partner in crime. My brother passed away 2 months ago. He was an amazing cultural leader. He was, you talk about songlines, he was a leader in his own field. He was a song man, composer, worked on his own in his own little cave. He worked with a myriad of cultural song men around the country. And I'm talking about the diverse song lines around the country, like a lot of song lines.
Stephen Page has had a difficult few months. The artistic director of Bangarra has been cleansing since the death of his brother, resident composer David Page, earlier this year. It was a heartbreaking loss that struck at the heart of the company. And he'd be forgiven for shutting down. There's no silver lining, there are no answers. But recently, Stephen's been honoured with a J.C. Williamson Award and a NAIDOC Award for Lifetime Achievement. His moving acceptance speech at the NAIDOC Awards in Darwin was unprepared, but in it, he recalled how his two brothers, Russell and David, were always pushing him to the front to take a leadership role. But he says they left me standing alone. Despite the past few months, the workaholic, self-described black romantic is philosophical about the future. Stephen Page, welcome back to Away.
Thank you for having me. I feel like I've been away a long time.
You have. Your speech at the NAIDOC Awards in Darwin, you said some amazing things. And I know that you say you didn't script that particular speech.
You can't script that sort of speech, though. Yeah, I had nothing prepared. And I never really do have prepared speeches. I get quite nervous about trying to. I think I get more nervous thinking of what I should say and what I should prepare.
I got on a plane today and I was coming, I was thinking, I don't want to be here, it's bittersweet. Why do I want to be here? Why would I want to be celebrating? What's important about what I do? And I had to really think about what I do and why I've been doing it. But when I see audience come to our shows and when I see them, people connecting and their spiritual consciousness just shifts from hearing sound or language or contemporary soundscape with costume and light, and this theatrical Indigenous experience is like contemporary ceremony and it's in their face. And that audience connection, they just connect to it, even if it's just a little bit, that's okay. And then I thought, that's the shift I'm making and passing on to the next generation.
You talked just briefly before about, not an existential crisis, those are my words, but a little bit of, like, before you got up there, just what is it that I do? And maybe some kind of deep questioning that happens when you're at those kind of events when people are honouring you.
Yeah, I think, I did tell them that I've had a shitty couple of months and, you know, losing my brother and just you sort of start to weigh things up and you sort of, you look at your life and you reflect your journey, and sorry business does that. I think when blood is connected to you that strongly and you didn't plan for it to happen so quickly or so in the moment, it just sort of made me think about a lot of things. And then the NAIDOC rang up and said, oh, you've been nominated for the Lifetime Achievement Award. And then I was thinking, oh, okay. And then, it was just all these things were lining up. And I think also going into, you know, it was on country, the Larrakia, but it was in Darwin. And, you know, obviously Northern Territory has a strong significance to me. And then flying in there and then being in that space, in that room with black fellows from all walks of life. And it can be quite daunting in the best way. And it also strips you back. It almost, even though everyone's dolled up to the nines and tucks and top hats and bows and gowns, and I just thought, imagine if everyone came in their own sort of, I just always get, I just visualize and I start creating a story outcome to everything. And I don't know if that's just because the way I've worked for many years, but when I sip into that situation, I just look at it like, not saying that everything's a performance, but it just felt, yeah, just felt real. And you feel quite vulnerable because you are with all these people from all walks of life, and everyone is a leader in their own right, and everybody, it just makes you look, yeah, strips everything away.
Well, I mean, it's just one, you know, series of awards, the J.C. Williamson. I think you're a seasoned
I'm an award slut. Yeah. Someone said to me, "Oh, you're like
the word awardee."
No, I didn't mean it like that. But someone said, "Oh, you're like an award slut," but and I thought, "Oh, well, that's probably a direct way." Look, once again, that happened to come out at the same time, and I felt, and I was like, J.C. Williamson, I know that person works in the musical industry, and then I realised it was. These days it's so quick. Everyone's a historian. You can just Google. I feel really bad. I was like, J.C. Williamson, I know that name. And then I was trying to work out how it played along in the Heltman Awards. And I was thinking, oh, okay, that's sort of
significant.
Yeah. Then I started getting a bit of conspiracy. Like, you know, I started getting a bit paranoid. Like, oh maybe people are trying to tell me to move on. But anyway.
And that would be because you're being honoured for a body of work and for lifetime achievement. It's like,
is this fella still here?
Yeah. Still at Bangarra?
Are you still at Bangarra, Stephen? Yes, I'm still at Bangarra. It's funny when I go home on community, obviously 25 years of 60,000 years is nothing, you know, and it's usually the people that are closest to me and my family or yeah, your own mob will tell you straight up and... they're like, oh, that's nothing, 25 years. You almost have to be at something for 100 years before you've done good damage. And I was sort of like, oh, what's good damage? Anyway.
Is it a bit like, though, I mean, you must kind of have a sense when you're up on stage on that dais and someone's handing you an award at this point, it must be like, well, what's this for?
And that award is like a big plate. I felt like I was at Serena at Wimbledon, you know, I felt like I was Serena's cousin and I was like, when I walked up, the first thing I thought was, oh my God, it looks like a Wimbledon trophy tray, like those bowls. And then Serena Williams' image came to my head and I was just thinking, this is crazy. And so by the time I got up, my mouth got really dry and I was like, oh, I need some water. And then usually they say that happens because nerves kick in. And it was just that sort of natural nerve thing. It's almost the same when I remember, it's sort of that nervous thing because I was quite a nervous performer when I was a dancer. Like I'd be in the wings waiting to go out and I'd always be early and I'd almost build my own nervous anxiety system around me. And I don't know if that was the fuel that I needed to go out on stage. It's bizarre. But I just had, yeah, I was having really quite vivid flashbacks of Serena Williams. My brother, my two brothers were in my head and then my dad was in my head and I was thinking, this is so bizarre. It's almost like these types of recognition or awards somehow, you have these quick little sort of flashbacks, like in the movies, you know, when you have those quick cuts of flashback. It was, yeah, it's bizarre. Anyway. But again, I think people have those when they think they're going to die. Mm. God, Daniel, I'm on a weird trip today, sorry.
My brother David, who will always be around, his music and legacy will live on. My brother Russell, losing one and then losing two. They pushed me up the front all the time and then they left me standing alone. But I tell you, I'm going to keep pushing forward. And
in that moment of euphoria, it's possible to forget. But you didn't forget anything. And one of the most moving parts of the speech, of course, the loss of two brothers.
Yeah, no, God.
Loss of David. I mean, it hits so many people so hard. You said that Russell, who you also lost some years ago, also a member of Bangarra, then you lost David. You said they were always pushing you up the front and then they left you standing there alone.
Yeah. Yeah, and then they left me. They did leave me, the bastards. And like I said, I didn't plan for it. And I kept thinking, yeah, they used to always push me up front. And I remember when I was offered to take over Bangarra, and it was sort of confidential. And I remember I lived with Russell and David we lived together in Paddington, because I was about to leave Sydney Dance Company as a dancer. And I said, they wanted just to be the artistic director of Bangarra. And the boys just jumped on me, like excited. They wanted to go out and play pool and have a beer, and they wanted to celebrate. And I was like, I haven't said yes yet. And then they were like, this would be great. You can lead and you can create, and, you know, we all trust you and we totally love your vision and we'll be there for you and we'll help you. And they were so instrumental. And without the both of them, and it used to be really funny, we always would stick together and go out together socially. We would work together in a creative room. We would go from the rehearsal room, and David would come in the rehearsal room, and Russell and I would be creating steps, and David would throw, you know, his two bob in and say, oh, what he thought. And he'd always wanted to kick his legs around a little bit more than Russell and I wanted to. But you know, there was that collaborative process. So yeah, they were on that night at NAIDOC. I could see them both standing either side of me, and I remember that moment of them just saying, yeah, you know, we've got your back. Let's do this. This is cool. Yeah. And because at the time too, you got to think, in the early 90s, and a lot of things were fermenting in Sydney, and especially the coming down of the early days of black theatre, and you know, we're sort of all coming out of the aftermath of the bicentenary in 88, and it was early 90s, and, you know, Treaty was big, Yothu Yindi, and coming out of that, and we were sort of cementing ourselves around the build-up to Paul Keating's speech at Redfern Park. And so there was that night at NAIDOC, and then the image of Russell and David either side of me. And yeah, it quickly just took me back to that moment. And which is a beautiful thing. But yeah, I didn't plan. I didn't think I'd lose them this quick in our journey. Yeah.
The music, which of course, you know, is where you will miss David in the future in Bangarra. Mm. I've always said that, you know, his music was for me, and I listened to it. I listened to the CDs, and I, in fact, this program begins generally every week with a composition by your brother. So I listen to it as music. Mm. It's only when I'm at a production or at a performance that I think this is composed for what I'm seeing.
Yeah, for story.
Yeah, but you know, you are going to miss that.
Oh, look, I cried the whole week. Like, and I think that it's like when he passed. When I went to go and cleanse where he passed, and Matthew Doyle, who's a Darawal Gadigal young man who's been with us all our lives, and he was one of the first people I rang to come with me to just cleanse and smoke and sing and connect. And, you know, sort of in my mind, I asked a few questions to David, and it was probably from that moment I walked out and I thought, oh, I really want to, oh my God, he's a leading cultural song man. And, we just take for granted of who we are as people. And when we work together, we forget the importance. And then I was like, I'm having a ceremony film. I want to have every song, every story. Like, it was like me wanting to put on an opera. Like, I just wanted to, this contemporary ceremony to celebrate. The more I thought about it, the more I thought about its legacy. And so the week of bumping in, I was just like, you know, I'd have these moments, and then I hear his voice and of all things, the hanging trees, and like, because this piece is about massacre and mourning. Mm. And so the significance was quite deep. But some of his melodic contemporary chants that are so inspired by the sing-sing of living traditional old men singing, and the way that he can digest and swallow the tones of those and then filter it through not just his soundscape and the instruments, but his voice. I don't know. I think we're going to wait another 200 years for someone like that to come along. Maybe 60,000, I don't know. But he really paved the way for that wonderful crossover of both contemporary and traditional.
So how do you, I mean, I know Steve Francis, who's a long-time composer with Bangara, and Paul Mack, who collaborated beautifully.
Paul Mack and his electronic craziness in the best way.
Collaborated beautifully with David on the soundtrack to Black, which is a soundtrack I listen to as music. They had to come in, I understand, to finish some of the work the music?
Davey was personally in a bit of exhaustion when we were creating the works, and he was having some personal problems, and I was trying to work out the best way to help assist, because as I said before, I think I just take it for granted, and I'm such a workaholic, and I think I said at the NAIDOC that I'm such an obsessive black.
You did.
I'm so obsessed about my culture, and I was hoping I wasn't being rude to my own peers, but I was just, I'm so proud of what I do, and I'm constantly every day working in a profession where you just live and breathe, and you educate yourself, and you reflect, and you just keep brewing and growing with knowledge and culture. And so, I was worried. So my optimism energy is always on the front foot. And unfortunately for Dubs, especially in the last 2 years, he was just sort of really sitting back in things. And I was really concerned. And I was just like, oh, well, maybe we can try to get Stephen and Paul Mack in and give you a bit of rest. And, and then I realized, I was like, oh, how would you cope if someone said that to you? Like, you never take a break. And I would be quite honest with him. I would, we were quite open. We were so close. Like, I could sort of say, I'm not doing this to your ego or my ego. It's just like, I know I'm not going to get greatness, but I'm willing to allow you to have some space. And yes, it's not going to be as great as what you give, but the show must go on. And these guys are so inspired by you anyway. And he was like, he sort of gave in. He was sort of like, yeah, sure. So it's really funny. Like, he spits out it's almost like an album every year. And, and Kanye and JC and Beyonce, they all take, I love how I compare him to the great of them, which is better. But, his soundscapes are much better. But, he has to do one every year. They take 4 years every sound project that they do. But anyway. Can you and I work on it? We should do a great, concert memorial in Sydney. Wouldn't that be cool? Like, images and get electronic versus session musicians and, Ursula to sing. Like, wouldn't that be cool? What if we could produce it together? Let's tell Radio National to help us.
Do you ever wake up in the morning and go, I'm not doing it?
Yeah, I don't take enough holidays in that. And look, my holidays are usually hanging out with my son Hunter, or him and I go into a cafe and we yarn, like last year I just took 7 days off, went up to Bundjalung country, and, I was just in salt water. I would just be on the beach from 9 o'clock in the morning, and I'd have these little 10 minutes laying in the sun and then 15 minutes in the water, and then I'd go and do a bit of yoga and stretching, my version of what I call yoga, which is an Aboriginal version of yoga, my version of yoga. So when I say workaholic, I know I really do believe I'm just blessed that I was given the fate of my life to work in this profession. Like, I just adore it. Like, I turned 50 in December and I didn't want any fuss, and all my black peers were going, what are you doing? You should be able to throw a big, you're rich, you can throw. And I was like, am I really rich? I wish I was rich. I don't think any black fella's really rich. I think you're broke from all your cousins getting loans. I come from a big family. I'm literally like an ATM every weekend. But anyway, taking a break, going on the beach. I love what I do professionally. And and my son is a huge inspiration. And I thrive every time we talk or we're together. He listens to me, I listen to him. The dancers in the company, you know, my dancers are 17 at Bengara now, and they're aged between 21 and 43. They're stronger. There's just something in the water at Bengara that, you know, keeps them together. And what I love about Bengara dancers is that we're all from all walks of life. We've got some Johnny-come-latelys, which we mean people that are finding their identity now. We've got people that were part of Stolen Generation. We've got people that come from grassroots rural communities. We've got urban dysfunctional sort of clans that join. And we're all so honest about who we are as a race and an identity and the diverse culture we come from. And the way that I can sit down with traditional people and talk how I'm an urban yellow fella and how open we can be about the loss of culture and the living sense of singing culture and how we bring that together. And I think it's my honesty that has been probably the glue that's kept that company together.
Well, like I said, keep doing what you're doing. And I don't think...
I can rave on, eh?
I don't think these Lifetime Achievement and JC Williamson's and Helpman's and NAIDOC Awards actually mean people are kind of like pushing you out the door. But yeah, look...
Maybe it's to stimulate to go for another 25 years. Yeah,
absolutely. And I don't think there's any subtext.
Well, it's funny because they call at work when Hunter started in Clever Man, the next day they came in, everyone was calling me Clever Dad. So I thought that was quite hysterical.
Stephen Page, always a pleasure.
Thank you.
The indomitable Stephen Page, the artistic director of Bengara Dance Theatre. And the company is touring its latest production, Hour, a work in three parts. There are performances at the State Theatre Centre in Perth, the Canberra Theatre Centre, QPAC in Brisbane, and the Arts Centre in Melbourne. More details on our website, abc.net.au/rn. This is Away, Indigenous Art and Culture. You're with me, Daniel Browning.